happy day. When Jesus wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to take a look at how a healthy plant-based diet may substantially reduce type 2 diabetes from Harvard University, and how University of Otago in New Zealand shows that zinc, a simple mineral, can work against diabetes complications, and how kids with too little vitamin D are far more likely to develop asthma. This is a good study, a 10-year study. It's done at the Telethon Kids Institute in Australia. We're also going to look at the role of diet in greater depth, and a whole lot more on how we can live a longer, healthier life. Then I'm setting aside the rest of today's program for individual commentaries, including from Chris Hedges, It's Worse Than You Think, from TruthDig, my own commentary that I spent much of yesterday writing, to try to give us a better understanding of what can unify us, so that we can actually take advantage of the crisis that many of us see emerging in the White House. And also, finally, to understand it's not about the Democrats or Republicans, conservative or liberals. We need to look at this as a puzzle and take it apart piece by piece and then look at each piece and then say, does this make sense? Is this reasonable? Is this why this happened or that didn't happen? For example, why, with all the exposure that Jill Stein had, clearly the most qualified of all the candidates running since Ralph Nader, why did she only get 1% of the vote? What does that tell us? I'll give you my insight on that as well. Plus, we're going to hear from two people, including a former liberal, staunch liberal, who has a different perspective today. She did not vote for Trump. She's not a Republican. But I believe that this kind of voice needs to be heard. And also, what happens when you get someone who's just about ready to go on camera, but is so angry they can't, and they're rageful? If we're able to hear what they're saying in their rage, do we benefit from it? We're going to do that. We're going to hear what someone has to say in the middle of a full-scale meltdown. But remember, listen, it's heavily edited because of all the cursing. But listen to what is actually said. See if it makes sense to you. And also, a highly respected bishop explains why the church invented hell. Who better to tell us about heaven and hell than a bishop who has spent his entire life there in the church and has a different perspective on it? I thought you'd find it very interesting. And more on the environment today, but I'm going to incorporate my comments on the environment by showing that this is a major issue that is not being addressed by either party in the United States. In fact, 99% of all things relevant to our future and health, we're not addressing. Why not? I'll explore this. Let's begin. Most people have kids that play outside, at least part of the year, depending upon where you live. And that's good. It's good that they get around nature. It's good that they learn about nature. And when I was growing up, and I'm sure this would apply to you as well, it was expected that you would have hobbies and things that interest you. For me, I love woodworking. I love to see how you could make something from a log, a tree. And so that was a way I spent a lot of time. For my older brother, it was mechanics on a car. Every one of my friends had different hobbies. Today, you generally don't see that. You don't see a lot of hobbies. I wish that in every community we had crafts guilds where people could go, irrespective of their ability to pay, and learn all these skills and crafts and trades that most kids today, if they learn these, they could actually build something. Instead, a lot of today's kids only learn how to buy something. And so we don't get outside. We're not building a lot. We're not using our critical thinking skills. We become passive spectators watching the world's events unfold in front of us. If it's one of those virtual reality sets that you put over your head and then everything is in front of you and all you have to do is just show up and experience it. But how do you explain then what really allows us to grow? What allows us to grow is when we're challenged, when we see our weaknesses, when we embrace our weaknesses instead of trying to defend them or excuse them and grow from them. This all gets me to this simple little lesson that was published in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, and that is kids are not getting outside enough. They're not getting their vitamin D. And the average junk food diet doesn't contain vitamin D. So, quote, children with vitamin D deficiencies are more likely to develop asthma, and this is a 10-year study done in Perth, Australia. Quote, we know vitamin D plays an important role in regulating the immune system and promoting healthy lung development. But if you're not getting enough vitamin D, your immune system is not going to be strong. Hence, we see a lot of kids with immune-related conditions, and a lot of adults as well. So let's make sure that we're getting out in the sun, or if not that, at least making sure you're taking between 1,000 on the low end and 5,000 of vitamin D3. From Harvard School of Public Health, quote, consuming a plant-based diet, especially one rich in high-quality plant foods, such as whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts, and legumes, is linked with a substantially lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes, according to the newest study out. Quote, this study highlights that even moderate dietary changes in the direction of a healthful plant-based, that's a vegan diet, can play a significant role in the prevention of type 2 diabetes. These findings further provide evidence to support current dietary recommendations for chronic disease prevention. And it was published in PLOS One. I've recently completed, in September, a major study, one of the largest ever done. It's over 500 individuals total who participated on changing their diet, exercising, de-stressing, and they changed the outcome of diabetes, high blood pressure, depression and anxiety disorder, and obesity. We had people in the study who their blood sugar went from like 200 down to 80 with no medicines. Those who were on meds, their doctors took them off. The same was true for high blood pressure, where they had to be on high blood pressure-lowering medications. By the end of the study, their doctors took them off. Their blood pressure was normal. This required no medicines whatsoever. It was purely diet. So, where Harvard did a good study, we did the actual clinical study. And I'll be submitting it for publication in some peer-reviewed journals in the near future, but it just shows you how easy it is to go from diabetic to non-diabetic, from at risk of dying from a stroke to normal blood pressure, to have a heart that's been damaged and arteries that have scratches and lesions, to clean and smooth and healed, all through diet. And a vegan diet is the basis of that. From the University of Otago in New Zealand, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients, quote, good evidence for zinc against diabetes complications. Quote, higher zinc levels in the blood may be linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease for those with diabetes. Now, we know that zinc is an essential mineral. We know that it's important because it helps with your immune system. There are at least 14 major papers published on this in just one journal talking about how it can help you with diabetes. Almost everyone that we check who has diabetes, they have deficiencies of zinc in their body. You don't need a lot of zinc. I'm suggesting elemental zinc, maybe 15 milligrams a day. And men, here's something you may not know. With each ejaculate, no matter whether it's masturbation or sexual contact, you're losing most of the zinc in your body. So if you're having sex every day, make sure you're taking a zinc supplement every day. For runners, for athletes, make sure you're getting your zinc because that athleticism, which is good for you, also burns up the zinc. And finally, lycopene, that's what you get from raspberries and red grapes and red plums and sweet potatoes and yams, watermelon and tomatoes. And lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N, protect your skin from cancer due to ultraviolet radiation when you take it internally. Now, this is Research Institute of Environmental Medicine in Germany. And this is published in the British Journal of Dermatology. Quote, supplements of lycopene-rich tomato nutrient complex with lutein may protect against the damaging effects of ultraviolet exposure on the skin. So we know that ultraviolet radiation damages the skin. You can see it. You see it on the person's hands. You see it on their neck. First, most people may not recognize these little tiny dots, and frequently they're right under the skin, and those could be precancerous. If not dealt with, it could end up being cancerous. And you don't want the melanoma, which is a really devastating cancer. Squamous cell carcinoma is more often what happens. Basal cell carcinomas, in any case. And those are relatively easy to treat. You go in, the doctor can either freeze them out. If they're found to be cancerous, they'll generally numb the area and then scoop it out and then burn it. And rarely does it come back. And almost all that's due to excessive exposure to sunlight and burning and tanning and burning and tanning earlier in life. Today's aging spots and precancerous or cancerous lesions may have been due to something you allowed 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And of course, we see it in the thickening of the skin, the wrinkles, the folds, that also is to this. So make sure you're getting your tomato juice and your red fruits. That'll protect you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. And by the way, on this break, I'm going to play you something from just a renowned musician, poet, philosopher, sage, someone who did an awful lot to help understand our appreciation of lyrics. For me, this man was one of the greatest lyricists in music of all time. You may not know this, but this man's music appeared in more than 50 films, yet he never did what everyone else does, like John Williams. He never watched a film and then conducted the music based upon that. People just loved his music and took music off his albums and put it in his films. See Who You Know was the author of what I consider just a great song. Please listen. You tell me if you know who he is. He just passed. I think he was 84 years of age.
Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to her kitchen chair. She broke your throat.
One of the greatest lyricists in the history of music, Leonard Cohen. Now, I'd like to spend a little bit of time, and I'm going to incorporate in my discussion current events from the environment, from the workplace, from the world of body politic, but also addressing many of your concerns, anguish, anger, rage, confusion, sadness. All of these are being expressed or felt by different people depending upon who you voted for, what you see the outcome to be, and what you believe this means. But what if I suggested there is a different outcome possible? That there is a way of using all that's happened as a wake-up call? You see, I'm used to this. I'm used to people coming into my office every day, sitting across from me, and they hand me a letter from their doctor, and the doctor says, "We tried everything. We've tried it all two or three times. There's nothing more we can do. Go home, put your life in order." And then and only then do they think, well, maybe there's another way. It generally requires a major crisis before someone even thinks about trying another reality. So I'm used to this. And that's why we're going to take a look at some different people's reaction. It's not that I support or challenge the reaction. It's just to give you an idea of how some people in our society are expressing themselves. This is a former liberal, a real strong-hearted liberal, who did not vote for Clinton, did not vote for Trump, is not a Republican, but has this to say.
Dear liberals, now I know you're really upset about Donald Trump's victory, and I'm sure you want to blame it on racism and hatred and sexism and maybe Russia and definitely ignorance. But the truth is, we need to have a talk. As a former liberal, I can tell you something. It's time to take a look in the mirror. You were doing okay during the Bush administration when you protested war and privacy invasions, among other things. But then you went and did exactly what I did when I was an Obama supporter.
I sat back for the next couple years and figured I'd let you handle all that change because you're the one that was selling it anyway.
You started rationalizing injustice because Obama took office. And instead of doing what he told you to, being active and involved, you simply chose to close your eyes and ears and pretend he was an ideal progressive president. But now that chicken has come home to roost because people continued to suffer under the Obama administration. Not Goldman Sachs, not the corporations he empowered, and not TPP beneficiaries. Corporate America thrived, but working class Americans who also expressed support for Sanders, who you cast aside, have spoken. Even in the face of Obama leaving office and the very real possibility of a Trump presidency, you still couldn't be bothered to care about the corruption and crime that legitimately upset Trump supporters and the rest of us. You rationalized Hillary Clinton's war crimes and ignored her weapons deals to countries that oppress women and gays and murder innocent civilians in Yemen. You justified oligarchic rule because Trump was mean. You sat on your high horse and blamed everyone but yourselves. And while his rhetoric is absolutely dangerous, and I too could be on the chopping block as a journalist and vocal dissenter, for all your claims of tolerance and love and compassion, you failed to seek the real reasons Trump rose to power. Yes, bigotry and xenophobia are definitely issues, but there's something much deeper going on here. People are terrified by terrorist attacks, which are direct results of foreign policy, including Obama's and Hillary's. Don't believe me? Here, listen to the Orlando shooter explain himself.
A lot of innocent women and children are getting killed in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, okay?
I understand that. You're upset about the bombing in Syria and Afghanistan, and you want the bombing and the killing to stop.
Many Trump supporters might not fully understand the concept of blowback, but considering you view yourselves as so rational and sane, take it for what it is. You allowed this to happen while you kicked your feet up, put flowers in your hair, and pretended Obama was a savior and stopped paying attention. Then there's economic hardship, which drove working class Americans to desperation and drove immigrants from south of the border, also in desperation, to the United States looking for opportunities. And guess what? Hillary contributed to both of these issues. We all know she's a war hawk. Iraq, Libya, Syria, and her fervent support of drones much. And she has long advocated top-down trade agreements. And had she won, you would have continued to ignore all of this because your party was in power, and you would have continued to wonder why the Trump crowd was so upset. You and the media mocked them and condescended to them and thought of every reason they supported him than the glaring truth. Decades of unjust authority and not being heard. Even if not all of them fully understand the reasons behind terror attacks and immigration, they know something is wrong. But that's neither here nor there, because Donald Trump will be president. Now you're horrified by all the awful things Trump could do, and you probably aren't even aware of all the precedents Obama set for Donald Trump to seize more power once he's in office. The caging of whistleblowers and journalists, the killing of American citizens, and the legalization of their indefinite detention without trial. Unaware of these things? Then maybe you shouldn't have been voting and jamming your political beliefs down our throats. And though Trump isn't going to save us and is going to abuse power in his own way, there's a reason the symbol of the establishment lost. And you have no one to blame but yourselves. If you're angry and sad, channel that palpable feeling into real compassion and tolerance. Try to understand how half the country would have felt if a corrupt, lying warmonger had gotten into power. Doesn't feel very good, does it? Maybe it's time to question the system that allows millions of people to dominate millions of other people with the flick of a pen. So I'm really looking forward to your renewed active engagement now that someone other than a Democrat will be president, because maybe we can use it to bring some actual peace and accountability to this country. Welcome back to the resistance.
Okay, that's her views. I'm going to save mine, my commentary, in a moment. But also, here's someone that you gotta listen through the anger and rage to what he's actually saying. See if there's anything in it that's reasonable, unreasonable, you agree or disagree with.
Morning, Tim. Morning. Howdy. How was Washington?
Great. I'm not shocked at all, Tim. Tim, I haven't even been into makeup yet, Tim. I'm not shocked at all. I've been saying this nearly a year. The moment you think he can't do it is the moment he takes the White House. Of course Trumpkin won. What is everyone so shocked about? Jesus, the media, the political elite, the pollsters, the markets, you. A drawer on the floor. How can everyone be so stupid? Hillary Clinton. What were the Democrats thinking? Hillary Clinton. Don't get me wrong, I wanted Hillary to win. I'd personally vote for Lucifer over Donald Trump. Trump, be grabbing, wall-building, climate change-denying, healthcare-abolishing, tax-dodging, spewing demagogue. Have you got to be to lose to that? Where was Sanders? Why wasn't he on the ticket? I have no doubt in my mind that Sanders would have beaten Trump, hands down. But instead, they chose Clinton, a candidate who's been cozying up to the banks and corporations for years, who is on record telling her corporate friends that you should have a public and a private persona. In other words, don't tell the truth to the plebs or you won't be able to rip them off. She'll do. That was the feeling. What did they think was going to happen? People keep saying to me, how did this happen? They're dumbfounded. But it's so simple. The left did this. This is my fault, people like me. When are we going to learn? The left have given up putting any argument across at all to the point where Clinton is considered left, liberal. On many issues, Theresa May is less right-wing than Clinton. And yet my friends are on Facebook saying, I'm with her. Oh, but she's better than Trump. Sorry, that's not good enough. Clearly, Clearly it's not good enough. And if I see me one more tweet containing a hashtag Trump wins next to a hashtag everyday sexism, I'm going to drop bollock. Not everyone that voted for Trump is a sexist or a racist. Some of them are, but most aren't. Most people didn't vote for her, not because she's a woman. They didn't vote for her because she offered no palpable change whatsoever. Same old Trump represents a change, a terrifying change, but a change nonetheless. Hillary represented, well, she represented very little, actually, because she protects corporate interests, because she doesn't call the police when questions from the debate are leaked to her in advance. I noticed we barely reported that. Not everyone that voted for Trump is a sexist or a racist. How many times does the vote not have to go our way before we realise that our argument isn't won by hurling labels and insults? Tory majority, government, Brexit, Trump, what next? When will we learn that the key is discussion? If you are unwilling to discuss, then you are creating the conditions in which Donald Trump and people like him can thrive. But instead of persuading people to vote, she just courted celebrity endorsements and then lost. What's going on? It's almost as if the political acumen of Beyonce and Jay-Z count for nothing. And then she loses it and loses the election, and she locks herself in her hotel because she's too upset, or because it had never occurred to them to even write a concession speech. Either way, grow up. I have no sympathy for her whatsoever. Be a better candidate. But thing is, I can't say this to any of my friends, Tim. People like me, I'd get lynched if I said this, because people like me won't listen. I did this. This is my fault. Donald Trump, the left is responsible for this result. Because the left have now decided that any other opinion, any other way of looking at the world is unacceptable. We don't debate anymore because the left won the cultural war. So if you're on the right, you're a freak. You're evil, you're racist, you're stupid. You are a basket of deplorables. How do you think people are going to vote if you talk to them like that? When has anyone ever been persuaded by being insulted or labelled? So now, if you're on the right or even against the prevailing view, you are attacked for raising your opinion. That's why people wait until they're in the voting booth. No one's watching anymore. There's no blame or shame or anything, and you can finally say what you really think, and that is a powerful thing. The Tories in charge, Brexit, and now Trump. And all the polls were wrong, all of them, because when asked, people can't admit what they think. They can't admit what they think. They're not allowed to. The left don't allow them to. We have made people unable to articulate their position for fear of being shut down. They're embarrassed to say it. Every time someone on the left has said, you mustn't say that, they are contributing to this culture. It's time to stop moaning. It's time to stop crying over spilt Brexit. It's time to stop ignoring your opponents, or worse, trying to silence them. It's time to stop banning people from speaking in universities. It's time to stop thinking that reposting an article on your Facebook feed is political engagement, that banning a gymnast from doing what he's good at because he insulted someone's religion somehow achieved something. And sorry, when did the Gymnast Association start thinking it was appropriate to start enforcing blasphemy laws? It's time to realise that reading The Guardian doesn't make you a liberal, that retweeting Greenpeace doesn't lower your carbon footprint. And if my mansplaining is triggering you, you can either to your safe space, or you can engage and debate me and tell me what I'm getting wrong. Because Trump just won the White House. Being offended doesn't work anymore. Throwing insults doesn't work anymore. The only thing that works is fathering, doing something. And all you have to do is engage in the debate. Talk to people who think differently to you and persuade them of your argument. It's so easy, and the left have lost the art. Stop thinking that everyone who disagrees with you is evil or racist or sexist or stupid, and talk to them. Persuade them otherwise, because if you don't, I'll tell you what you get President Trump.
Keep in mind, I've said many times that we should never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. Focus upon what he just said as far as communicating without denigrating. If you sit down with someone to want to share insights, each of you present what you consider your most important and viable way of looking at a problem. And if you do so in a humane way, with some compassion, then there's a probability at some point you may actually see that some of your positions are no longer tenable. If, however, you approach every single person with who holds a different point of view as the other, the enemy, less than, how exactly is that supposed to create unity? Right now, I believe that these are just pieces of a puzzle, but I have a different perspective. I believe that the reason, in no small measure, because Hillary Clinton lost was not because Donald Trump was a better candidate, ran a better campaign, has more to offer that's going to help people. I do not believe that. Instead, I believe that enough people finally realized that when you look carefully what she was promoting, it was nothing more than what Obama had promoted, much of which was the same thing that George Bush had promoted. No matter how you brand it, whatever the moniker is, it is the same. Just ask yourself this. In the last 32 years, under multiple administrations, how's it going for you if you're an average person? Is our school system better? Are we helping teachers to help students to be more critical in their thinking capacities? Have we broadened our perspective of the world we live in? Have we crossed boundaries of intolerance to learn about other cultures, other religions, other beliefs, other ethnicities? Have we helped our environment? I remember on the original Earth Day, I was asked to be the keynote speaker in Dallas. Thousands of people. And then I realized that no one really came for my talk, which is about what we can do, because they came for the music. And the entire place was just littered with every type of polluting coffee cup and soda bottles and hamburger wrappers. It was just one giant mess. And yet if you ask those people, do you believe in the environment? Yes, we went to Earth Day. What exactly did you learn? Doesn't it tell us something, or shouldn't it tell us something, when Leonardo DiCaprio, who is now considered the new celebrity environmentalist of the world, takes 200 crew members to Alaska or to Iceland so they can film something we've all seen 1,000 times and already know, and that is, gee whiz, the glaciers are speeding up and they're melting. And then what is the carbon footprint to travel 200 people to that location and back? And when he was in the Cannes Film Festival, flew back on a private jet to pick up an Environmentalist of the Year award, and then fly back on a private jet, and who hangs out on yachts that are, 300, 400-foot yachts, and gets their own private jets, and doesn't eat organic, and buys things he doesn't need. Does anyone see a contradiction in this? Do you really expect people to become that concerned about the entirety of the body politic and the social issues when they can't even take responsibility for the choices they make about their own diet or their children's diet? Just think for a moment before reacting. How likely is it a person is going to look for the truth in who could best serve the country when they're putting their child in danger of disease from obesity and diabetes and heart disease because they choose to be intentionally ignorant? Intentional ignorance, a concept I came up with about 2 years ago, because people are confused. We keep living with this false notion that smart people do smart things, stupid people do stupid things, but no, smart people do stupid things and good people do bad things. We can't even get the metaphors right. When we make a choice in that moment, in the moment we're in, that's who we are. And all of us have dominant energies that control every choice we make in life. So if we vote for someone without first doing our research on who we're voting for and what has that person done in the past, then whatever they bring forward after they've been given that power, we are then going to be either the beneficiary of or the victim of. And all we've had in the past 32 years, through Clinton's 2, then Bush's 2, then Obama's 2 terms in office, and what would have continued with Clinton, it's all the same. So if you're an average worker, you're not making more per hour. If you're a college graduate, you have the most debt in American history. If you're a teenager, there's more likelihood that you're going to be hungry than at any time, including during the Great Depression. If you're a senior citizen, there's more likelihood that you will not be able to retire because you won't have enough savings. And there's an effort, has been, through each administration, to privatize all or part of Social Security, and that was even through Clinton's. You've known nothing but war and conflict and regime change. You were always told that it was in the interest of democracy, freedom, and peace. For whom? Did you ever once stop reading the New York Times and listening to CNN and actually do homework to see, am I being told the truth? Or am I being considered so lazy intellectually that I don't want to know the truth because I wouldn't be able to handle it? What if everything they told me as platitudes and as feel-good moments in front of the camera, once they were elected, they did just the opposite? The poster child for that would have been Clinton and Obama, because Obama promised the blacks it would be different for you, justice. He even brought in a black attorney general. How many people on Wall Street, heading banks, who intentionally, with malice aforethought, engaged in reckless and criminal behavior that destroyed our economy, that caused 7 million homes to be foreclosed on, 28 million people to lose their homes, how many of those people were brought to justice? None, not one. How many homes did the President of the United States, who has signed more executive orders than all the other presidents combined, how many homes did he stop with a home foreclosure? None, not one. When did he help the people who had student debt and payday loans? None, not one. When did he stop racial profiling? It was not he, but citizens who demanded stopping the racial profiling. None. All the major acts that pointed to the dangers of hydrofracking came from outside of the government. The dangers of what would happen if you drilled in the Gulf of Mexico came from outside the government. The dangers of opening up our forest, our national forest, for exploration and mining were from outside the government. The worst treaty in American history, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that was Obama's. More drones, more war, more killing of citizens, that's Obama. More denial of benefits to the Gulf War vets and other vets who had suffered through these senseless, needless wars, that was Obama. A Veterans Administration so corrupt, so inept, that they said it could not be fixed, that was Obama. So why don't you go into any of the towns I've gone into? Walk down the streets I've walked. Speak with the thousands of people I've spoken to and say, what has changed in your neighborhood, in your life, in the opportunities you have? And they look at you and think, you're kidding. It was all promised, none delivered. So maybe we should allow that some people finally started to look for the truth, and what they saw disappointed them. And that was especially true in many women. Now, this begs the issue, who's a Republican, who's a Democrat, who's a liberal, who's a conservative? Because what I do not see today being offered are true principles that harken back to the best of what a good liberal, an honest liberal, should be. We have no precedent for a good liberal in the United States in the body politic at present today. These are all faux finished to look like, sound like, but represent none of the ideals. I have to go back to FDR. In 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Banking Act, better known as the Glass-Steagall, that destroyed later by the so-called New Democrats, Bill Clinton and his sidekick as Vice President Al Gore. The Banking Act established the FDIC, protecting bank clients from losses due to banks' debts. And it separated the commercial savings banks from investment banks. Under Obama and under Clinton, there was no suggestion or even effort to restore the Glass-Steagall Act, which they could have done. Instead, derivative trading has gone through the roof. And they've even done a bank bail-in. So if a derivative faults, and it will, to the tune of maybe $15 to $20 trillion each, and you've got four banks, you're dealing with almost $90 trillion, we the people would have to bail them out. That's what Obama signed. Even in the mortgage sector, we are now back to the kind of speculative loans that occurred in before the 2008 recession. Under Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal response to economic crisis, the founding of the Civil Conservation Corps, which employed over 3 million people, in labor jobs related to conservation and development of natural resources over a 9-year period. Under Obama, none of that. To the contrary, under Clinton and Al Gore, and I'm not even including George Bush because he's such a moron, but under the so-called smart people, they opened up the lands for corporate exploitation, not conservation. Under FDR, they founded the Public Works Administration. They spent over $6 billion to build large-scale public works projects, the nation's largest construction efforts to date, which included the Tennessee Valley Authority projects. And during his second term, which was 1935 and 36, a second worst project administration employed millions more to carry out public works projects. That's why we ended up with so many highways and tunnels and new bridges and gas lines and water lines. Under Obama, our city's infrastructures, the condition of our roads, our highways, our bridges, our tunnels, the inner cities look like remnants of aerial bombings during World War II. The condition of our trains coming in and out of Penn Station. Want to compare it to something? Even go to China, to Italy, to France, Japan. Compare their high-speed trains to ours. We're not even the same universe. We're so backward. We're a banana republic compared to them in their technologies. So our infrastructures were never made important, but the military-industrial complex was. Under FDR, they launched the Temporary Emergency Relief Administration, or TERRA, as a rapid response to find jobs for the jobless. By 1932, 1 in 10 families in some states were provided with some kind of work through TERRA. Under Obama, no concerted efforts to launch a viable jobs program. There was, in fact, the greatest amount of home foreclosures and small business closures in American history. Where were the executive orders to stop those home foreclosures? Where was the president coming to cities like New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco and saying, isn't it time that all of these business foreclosures stop, only benefiting increased rentals by the landlords who control the political system? But there was no such meeting ever. Under FDR, during his first term, unemployment dropped from 25% to 14%. And they weren't playing with numbers. Today, ours is at 28% and going up. By the end of his presidency, unemployment in America was 1.9%. And during 1932 to 1940, the economy grew at 58% peacetime. Under FDR, they started the Social Security Act to assure economic security for the elderly and the poor and the sick. Under Obama, they wanted to privatize it. And by the way, just so you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt appointed the first woman in U.S. history to a cabinet position, Frances Perkins. She became Secretary of Labor. Oh, and it was Frances Perkins who created Social Security. Not a man, her. And under FDR, the National Labor Relations Act to assure the right of employees to organize into trade unions. And so today, it's all about giving the power, the money, and no regulations to corporate America with the idea that somehow we, the public, will get the benefit of trickling down. Under FDR, 1937, there was a Housing Act. It subsidized public housing for low-income families. Under the new Democrats, Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary Clinton slashed in favor of more prisons. 300% money went to prisons, privatized, not to new housing. Under FDR in 1938, the Fair Labor Standards Act set a 40-hour work week, established minimum wage, guaranteed 1.5 times hourly rate for overtime and prohibitive employment of minors in oppressing child labor. Under Obama, it's continued the minimum wage at slave labor rates. FDR was the pivot for minorities, especially African Americans, Catholics, and Jews, and Native Americans shifted allegiance from the Republican Party of Lincoln to the Democrats. And so it was. Under Obama, Standing Rock. Well, of course, because he was so concerned about the injustice to the Native Americans, he went to Indian Rock. You saw him there. You saw him and Hillary Clinton both taking time from their schedules to show that we are here to support the Native Americans. We are here to support all the treaties we have broken. We would never allow a gas line, an oil line, to go under the Veterans Cemetery in Virginia. We would never allow that. Americans would be outraged. Well, what about the cemetery if it's Native Americans? What if it crosses all these rivers? What if every one of these lines had been put in, had been leaking? Oh, I forgot. No, we didn't see the president at the side of the Native Americans who were campaigning nonviolently. We didn't see it, did we? Maybe I missed it. And the reason we didn't see it, nor the media, and think of what that would have meant if the president had aligned, but I forgot the president already aligned with the companies that owned that oil and gas line. Vijay Prashad in Counterpunch talks about that. Talks about the names of towns and districts in North Dakota that echo the violence of earlier time when the United States government pushed Native Americans off their ancestral lands onto reservations and for many to their deaths. One such town is Cannonball. It is in the heart of Sioux Country on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation. North of Cannonball on the Missouri River is the town of Fort Rice, south of Fort Yates. These are two old military forts from the days of the wars against Native Americans, which were oases for traders and settlers. Across the Missouri, about 3 hours' drive east, is Whitestone Hill, where in 1863 the U.S. forces defeated the exhausted detachments of the Lakota Sioux. West of Cannonball is Little Bighorn, where the Sioux had their greatest victory against the forces of General George Custer. The battle is known as Custer's Last Stand. South of Cannonball is Wounded Knee, where the Sioux armies were fatally defeated in 1890. And war and conflict surround the little town of Cannonball, itself named after the technologies of destruction brought such grief to the Sioux and other Native Americans. Cannonball is now ground zero for the major fight between Native Americans and private energy firms, such as the Energy Transfer Partners, over the building of the Dakota Access Pipeline. This pipeline is part of an immense project to move fracked natural gas and crude oil to the major population centers of the United States. It will run from North Dakota's Bacon region to Illinois. Native Americans complain that the pipeline runs through their sacred lands, desecrating burial grounds and other cultural monuments. They worry that the pipeline will likely damage the Missouri River, the lifeline for the Standing Rock Sioux tribes' reservations. And yet, what do we hear from the President of the United States on this? Even the government's investigators recognize the hazards of this pipeline. The Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration reports that since 2010, it has received more than 3,300 incidents of leaks and ruptures on such pipelines. The effluent from these leaks would poison not only the Missouri River, but also the Mississippi River, which flows further east. Petitions against the pipeline bore no fruit. It was to beat back against the intransigency of the LaDonna Brave Bull. Allard, a local historian and activist, created the Sacred Stone Camp on her land as a protest, headquarters, and a center for cultural and spiritual preservations. The camp takes its name from the Native American name for the Missouri River, the river that makes the sacred stones. So where are the water protectors? Why aren't the American people made aware of this? Why isn't the media there? Why aren't all the different people in Congress there? This is important, yet it's not important to them. You see, one of the things the Green Party will be hopefully doing in the future is that it had 1 million people. Now, you would think, well, that's only 1 million people. I want to ask you this. At the height of the Civil Rights Movement, when many of us who were Caucasians were fighting with our brothers and sisters because we knew the deep, traumatic history they had gone through. I grew up in a segregated town. I knew what it was like for these people because one of my best friend and I were taunted, beaten, harassed on a regular basis. So I had a little different experience than those who've never been around that. And that's why I committed to challenging the larger injustices. At the height of the feminist movement, at the height of the environmental movement, at the height of the anti-war movement in Vietnam, what percentage of the American population actively protested? It was never more than 1%. So the idea that there's only 1 million people who voted green, to me, that's extraordinarily encouraging. That shows 1 million people who are well-educated, intentionally educated, not intentionally ignorant, intentionally choosing to learn about the issues that make a difference and then address that in the best way you can. So I don't look at that as a negative. I look at it as a good starting point because it is always throughout history, the empowered minority that ends up moving the disempowered majority to a better place. It's through them that change comes. Now, can you change the Democratic Party? No, it's not possible, because you would have to be in denial of the fact that it's not Hillary Clinton. It is hundreds of thousands of corporations and businesses and lobbyists that are in her favor, that have been there as a part of the permanent institution. They benefit, but not anyone else. Even when the media lies and covers for them, it's still obvious if you look. Now, last night on 60 Minutes, I believe that Donald Trump made an extraordinarily important statement. And I believe that there's optimism because of what he said. What did he say that was so important from my perspective? When challenged, and rightly so, in a good interview by Leslie Stahl about, hey, you were going to go to Washington and clean the swamp, but, you know, you've gone down there and now you're hiring all these insiders. And he acted, well, there's no one else there. Everyone in Washington's a lobbyist. Not true. In part, he may believe that because the man is functionally illiterate. He will never get smarter. So therefore, he will go right back in and hire all the other people from the Free Prize, the Heritage Foundation, the Free Prize Institute, and all the others who are the pro-neoliberal people. It doesn't matter whether they call themselves Democrat or Republican. It is irrelevant. So for me, that means that very shortly, he will start to betray the people who voted for him. That will be his undoing, because now you'll see what happens when a person will say anything to get elected and is clueless about how to do anything progressive. But for the record, this also wouldn't have been a defeat for Bernie Sanders. And why is it that the media has not looked at the actual WikiLeaks that show that the entire time Bernie Sanders was running, he was being undermined by the official, complete Democratic National group, including Hillary Clinton? They all were aware of it. You see it in their emails. So when we saw 25,000 people at Bernie's gathering and we saw 500 at Hillary's, that wasn't an illusion. It's just the media turned it around, making it seem as if Hillary was the right one and we can't even consider Bernie. Why not? Bernie had 36 factors that he supported, that young millennials supported, that were more idealistic. Was he perfect? By no means. Does he have his Achilles heel? Yes. But compared to either Clinton or Trump, he would have been in a different universe. And as a result, when Clinton and the Democrats, the corporate Democrats, saw that they would lose their power base with Bernie, especially those on Wall Street, especially the insurance companies, they would have lost hundreds of billions of dollars. They went about destroying him. And they succeeded. They rigged the election. So that's when Bernie's lawyer should have gone to court and demanded that this be addressed. He didn't. His idea was, well, we can change the Democratic Party by bringing in some people to modify its platform, meaningless because it's voluntary. All he was doing is feeding a whole new group of young people into the Democrat base. But most of those said no. More than 2 million of Bernie's followers said no to Hillary Clinton. So when you want to see why did this happen, a lot of those people refused to vote because of the betrayal. But in case you think that there wasn't anyone else available or qualified to vote for, aside from Bernie Sanders, you had Elizabeth Warren, Alan Grayson, Dennis Kucinich, Elizabeth Kucinich, Keith Ellison, Senator Brian Schatz, Senator Chris Murphy, Senator Mazie Hirono, by the way, the ultra-progressive on economy and social reforms, Senator Kristen Gillibrand, Maria Cantwell, a senator, Richard Blumenthal, senator, Tammy Baldwin, a senator, and Zephyr Teachout, a law professor at Fordham, Russ Feingold. Now, as far as not knowing anyone who's not a lobbyist, let me give you some people who are not lobbyists and who are there for the American public and who would have supported progressive cabinet positions and been there for oversight and input so the lobbyists wouldn't control the system. Michelle Alexander, African-American law professor at Ohio State University. Professor Michael Hudson on the economy. Professor Bill Black on the Treasury. Professor James Galbraith. Professor James Hansen on climate change. Professor Michael Mann on climate change. Manoa Hodder on environment. Ronnie Cummings on agriculture. Andrew Kimball on agriculture. Ralph Nader on consumer protection. Barbara Ehrenreich. Lawyer Jim Turner on health. Dr. Sidney Wolfe. Professor Robert Reich on labor. Professor Joseph Stiglitz on labor. Danny Roderick on trade. Marianne Williamson on social justice issues. Robert Kennedy Jr. on environmental and corporate pollution. Bruce Dixon on racial justice. Cornel West on racial justice. Glenn Ford on racial justice. And I have 2,000 more names. None affiliated with special interest groups, all affiliated with true progressive, humanistic, and spiritual values. So when you have someone who has the vacuity of Donald Trump suggesting that there's no one left in Washington, well, we can show you a lot of people who could go to Washington tomorrow and help change everything for the better. But if you don't know them, you're going to rely upon the people who are there, and they're all compromised people. Therefore, you will not be able to honor your pledges. And as a result, I believe there'll be a strong pushback in the very near future once he's gotten through his 100 days in his grace period and people say, well, you're just the same as Hillary Clinton or anyone else. So we now have an opportunity, we, the progressive community, to look at the historical values and ideals and bring together coalitions to work at the local level to help communities change one problem at a time. And oh, by the way, I'll give you the background. There's probably 2 million people who would have otherwise voted for Hillary, but Hillary was for mandatory vaccine, even wanted adults to be vaccinated, and they were living with the damages of children who are with autism or other brain disorders that Hillary Clinton refused to acknowledge, the CDC refused to acknowledge, the FDA refused to acknowledge. And you want to get someone really angry with you? Watch as a completely normal child is exposed to environmental factors, including but not limited to vaccines, including living near a coal-burning fireplace and ends up with excessive mercury in their body, living near a gas hydrofracking well that you support, and now they're no longer normal. When you screw with someone's kid, then all other issues are not relevant. Their kid's issue is. A lot of those people voted for Donald Trump because Trump's wife is an advocate for freedom of choice when it comes to vaccines and has accepted that vaccines are a problem the way they're done. None of the other candidates were. So you see, until you bring all these other factors in, why each group might have voted one way or the other, then you're not going to understand what the problem is. And we want to understand the problem today and build coalitions from the 1% that historically has always been at the center of positive change. So you see, I don't see this as being too complex, too deep for us to be able to handle. I see the answers being relatively simple. Start with open, honest communication, and two, begin to look at what people need in their life to change. What is personal to them is what they're most likely to engage in, and then help them at that level. More tomorrow. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Oh, you wanna leave me, but I refuse.